Welcome to the Delmarva Almanac. Each week, we connect you to the best of Delmarva. I'm your host, Dana Kester McCabe. This week on our show, we'll meet Milton painter Denise Dumont. We'll learn about the man from Dover who created the Victrola. We'll learn about Delmarva's secret gardens. And naturalist Jim Rapp will tell us about birding on prime hook. Denise Dumont came from a creative family, so it was perhaps not surprising that she would become a painter. Denise got her degree from Parsons School of Design, where she had an early inclination to do work that was representational.
At school, I studied the basics, and I studied a foundation program, and that gave me a really wonderful background. I'm glad I did it because I don't think I would have assembled that kind of knowledge myself. We had some really wonderful artists teaching there. One in particular really drove the appreciation of value into me in such a way that it is, it's part of the way I think, it's just part of my work, and it is foremost in my mind.
Denise has a preference for painting in oil and working plein air, outside. There is no mistaking a Denise Dumont painting. It is without a doubt impressionistic. Her brushwork is quick and gestural. At the same time, she shows a practiced hand that accurately captures the essence of a scene. Her compositions are pastoral, built with subtle, serene hues. Denise says she arrived at her style by trial and error.
I never really made a conscious decision other than being perceptual in that I paint what I see. So I guess it's a real personal choice, me arriving at the palette I have. And oddly enough, it's in a lot of ways not muted enough. So it's something that I'm trying to back off on even more. Brush marks are almost like fingerprints. They really are unique, and every artist has them, whether they are conscious or not. I think it's always an interesting study of looking at someone's mark making. I love painting. I'm a painter at heart because I actually take pleasure in the physicality of it. And so I like the way the brush feels in the paint and the way it goes on the canvas. There's also different moods and different moments where sometimes you find yourself painting more thinly or more thickly, and it's something you don't even think about until after it's done. So it's part of the love of oil painting, I think.
When Denise moved to Delaware, she says she found the coastal atmosphere similar to Long Island, where she was raised. She has places which she calls her favorite haunts to paint.
They are kind of cathartic in a way, you know. I like to paint them in different weather conditions and just sort of be there. You know, sometimes what's nice about a spot is just the spot itself, you know, apart from the painting you're going to do. There's a couple of spots where I just like to hear the ocean or, you know, feel the weather or that kind of thing. But I do tend to go back to the same spot a lot. So I guess it's a muse in a way. I love being near the coast. There's something, and I think it kind of comes from growing up in a similar environment on Long Island. You know, on one hand, it's very changeable, and there are things that you can kind of escape to, but on the other hand, it's the same, you know. You could always go to the shore, yeah, and you could always feel the weather. You could always see the ocean. I've been painting full-time for the past 10 years. And before that, I was working a day job for a long time. So I kind of feel like I've come full circle in a way. So I think that there's a lot of things that I'd like to explore in my art beyond the landscape, and even in the landscape.
Denise prizes authenticity and preparation. Whether it be through thumbnail sketching or visualization of the composition prior to beginning a painting, an underlying idea comes first.
You know, no truer thing is said. If it doesn't work on the thumbnail, it's not going to work on the canvas. That being said, the rest of a painting is very intuitive in that I'm pretty much responding to what it is I'm seeing, and it's not just depicting what's in front of me per se, but it's got to be driven by an opinion or a feeling or a mood. So the landscape, there's something unique about what I'm seeing, and whether it's the way the light is hitting a particular object, or whether it's a mood created by a gray sky. I mean, actually, I love inclement weather. Sometimes it's hard to be in it, but I love painting a gray, moody sky as opposed to a sunny blue sky. I would like my work always to be authentic and true. If you show up to your easel and you're painting something, you're not really crazy about it, it will show. It will not be full of that life and energy, and it will die on the walls. I think if we get too comfortable and we know exactly what we're doing, we're not growing. So I think being comfortable with being uncomfortable is something I've come to appreciate.
Denise accepts commissions and teaches occasionally. Visit our website, delmarvaalmanac.com/arts, to watch a video of this interview, see samples of her work, and get a link to her website. Art strolls are definitely a habit worth forming. Every month, enjoy a great night out while supporting local artists and businesses. Galleries and shops stay open late. Opening receptions feature special gallery exhibits. Often there is free entertainment. Many of Delmarva's communities now have monthly art strolls. Visit our website so you can get in the art stroll habit. delmarvaalmanac.com/artstrolls. What Thomas Edison called his talking machine, Eldridge Reeves Johnson perfected and called a Victrola. And that device brought music into the homes of millions of people around the world. Here's Marilyn Burkle to tell us about the Dover Museum dedicated to the man behind all that music.
Imagine hearing recorded music for the very first time. In the late 1800s, Eldridge Johnson was fascinated with the potential of what was known then as the gramophone. A dozen years after he improved the mechanics of the machine and began selling his version, the Victrola, he was a multimillionaire. In Delaware's First State Heritage Park in Dover, there's a museum that pays tribute to Johnson. Nina Todd, the site supervisor, says he was a man who delivered more than what was expected.
Eldridge Reeves Johnson was one of Delaware's native sons. Many people don't realize that, but he was actually born in Wilmington. At a very early age, his family relocated and moved down here to Dover. He went to school here in Dover at the Dover Boys Academy. Upon graduating from the academy, one of his desires was he wanted to go to college. But at the end of his academic career, his family was given the bad news that he was, I'm trying to put this politely, that he just really wasn't bright enough to go on to college. So they suggested to the family that perhaps you might want to just, you know, teach him a trade and, you know, cross your fingers and hope for the best. And so they did. They sent him to a trade school in which he learned mechanics. And that was how he got his start.
He had a small shop in Philadelphia doing mechanical repairs. When he went to work on a gramophone, he not only fixed it, he improved it. His spring-loaded motor eliminated the need to constantly hand-crank the machine. But he wasn't just a whiz at mechanics. He was a savvy entrepreneur.
His motto for life was, we seek to improve everything we do every day. So he was constantly searching for new, developing new, inventing new things. He was an inventor, but more than an inventor, he was a better businessman. He took the actually selling items to new heights. He took manufacturing items to new heights. He was on the cutting edge of so many ideas that today are standard in the practice of manufacturing and even retail sale.
Here's one example. In order to drive demand for the sale of Victrolas, Johnson started his own record label. He signed the most popular musicians of the day, opera star Enrico Caruso, jazz great Fats Waller, even the renowned conductor and composer John Philip Sousa. Tens of thousands of those early phonograph records are part of the museum's impressive collection of artifacts. When Johnson adopted Nipper, the dog whose head was cocked listening to a Victrola, as his company's logo, he licensed its use. The museum has hundreds and hundreds of Nippers, stuffed animals, salt and pepper shakers, even a huge sculpture. He recognized that he could attract customers at all income levels, and he developed a variety of Victrolas.
He came up with a concept that he would design machines that were inexpensive. There was a better end model, and then there was a high end model so that they could appeal to everyone. And he believed that everyone should have a talking machine in their home.
This is Marilyn Burkle. You're listening to the Delmarva Almanac, and we're talking to Nina Todd, historic site supervisor for the State of Delaware's Division of Historical and Cultural Affairs, about the Johnson Victrola Museum in Dover. If you visit, there are tour guides who will walk you through the collection.
But this is during the Taft administration. So a little more than 100 years ago, the president would be listening to a machine just like this one. Okay, and let us continue into the little next room here.
You'll learn that Johnson was well ahead of his time. His company provided daycare. There was a doctor on site. Workers could buy merchandise in a company store at discounted prices. He recognized, more than 100 years ago, that a successful company markets worldwide, and he established factories in Europe, South America, Asia, and Australia. Not bad for a man who was labeled too dumb for college.
One of, I think, the greatest lessons that I hope people will come away with in this museum is the fact that Mr. Johnson, in his childhood, didn't have a lot of support. There were a lot of people who did not feel that he was really very bright or really very promising. But he proved all of them wrong. And so we do a lot of young people that come in here. We do a lot of school groups. We're part of Delaware history. We have a lot of fourth graders who come to our museum. And I hope that all of them, while they're in their youth, can realize that, okay, maybe there aren't a lot of people behind you. Maybe there are people who don't think that you're capable of doing a lot of things. But that doesn't mean that in your future, you're not capable, that you're not destined to do great things.
And now for some Delmarva dates with history for this time period. On May 11, 1774, the Pennsylvania Gazette reported that the British cargo ship, the Severn, sank in the Roosevelt Inlet at Lewis, Delaware, during a storm. And on May 14, 1945, the crew of a German submarine, the U-858, surrendered off our coast after hearing of Germany's surrender at the end of World War II. Once hearing from her superiors that it was time to give up, she came to the surface and set a surrender flag. She then signaled the closest U.S. station and waited for the nearest Allied vessel. Four Navy ships escorted her to Cape May, New Jersey, and then to Fort Miles, Delaware. This was the first German warship to surrender to the U.S. It's time for a break now. When we come back, we'll learn about Delmarva's secret gardens. And naturalist Jim Rapp will tell us about birding on Prime Hook. Did you know that according to the USDA, 14% of American households did not have a sufficient quantity of affordable, nutritious food for at least part of 2014? Please consider giving generously to your local food bank regularly throughout the year. Visit our website for links for your state, delmarvaalmanac.com/hunger. Welcome back to the Delmarva Almanac. I'm Dana Kester McCabe. You might say that a gardener's job is simply to take nature's gifts and organize them according to their own needs and desires. In just about every small town and city on the peninsula, there are lovely public places where gardeners have done just that, all for our benefit. Most are lovingly tended to by volunteers, garden clubs, or master gardeners. This region has at least three peak blooming seasons, with spring and summer being the most showy. But fall is an equally good time to visit. A number of them have special educational events throughout the year. Some offer docent-guided tours. Most importantly, they are simply beautiful places to spend time. At the top of the peninsula are two amazing estates with formal gardens. In Wilmington is the Nemours Mansion, home of industrialist Alfred I. DuPont. The gardens there have extravagant fountains, colonnades, a maze, and a spectacular collection of mythological sculptures of marble and gold by French Art Nouveau artist Henri Crenier. Also in Wilmington is another DuPont family estate known as Winterthur, the home of plant collector and horticulturalist Henry Francis DuPont. While they also have formal gardens, this estate has a much more naturalistic approach. As its name might imply, many people would make yearly visits during the winter months to see their annual Christmas display. As we work our way down the peninsula, we head west to Earlville, Maryland, and the Mount Harmon Plantation. Their formal boxwood garden is complemented by rare 200-year-old English yew trees that may be the oldest in the United States. Another unique specimen they have is a naturally growing endangered native lotus. They celebrate this with their annual Mount Harmon Lotus Blossom Art and Nature Festival every year. Mark your calendar now for the first Saturday in August to attend. Continuing our Delmarva garden tour, just off Route 1 south of Dover, Delaware, is the Dickinson Plantation, home to one John Dickinson. He was known as the pen man of the American Revolution for his work on the Articles of Confederation and the U.S. Constitution. They have a small formal lawn and an authentic working colonial garden with vegetables, herbs, and flowers. Another historic site is the Fisher Martin Herb Garden in Swannendale Park in Lewis. They also have a colonial herb garden organized by categories such as medicinal, culinary, fragrant, and flowering. They have plants that were used for other household purposes such as dyeing fabric, and herbs used by the Native Americans from the Delaware coastal plains during the 18th century. Not far from Lewis in Milton is Lavender Fields at Warrington Manor, which specializes in aromatic lavender, which they use in handcrafted bath and culinary products. Even after the lavender has been harvested, the gardens there are lovely, and they have a small, peaceful meditation labyrinth that you can walk. Many of our oceanside resorts have attractive gardens to welcome visitors driving into town. In Ocean City, several neighborhoods have charming, colorful gardens at the entryways to beaches with birdhouses and sculptures. As we zigzag west again in Ridgely, Maryland, we come to the Atkins Arboretum, which we have mentioned on this show before. Besides nature trails, they have a butterfly garden and an interactive children's sunshine garden, which visiting kids can help plant and tend. Further west in Easton is probably my favorite. The Talbot Historical Society Museum has a wonderful free garden. As you pass through its gates, you'll feel like you're entering the secret garden from the classic children's book. Even when it is past its peak blooming period, it is a romantic, shady interlude. I personally recommend this as a place to take your intended to propose before a celebratory meal in downtown Easton. An equally lush and shady spot is the free garden next to the Burbage Funeral Home in downtown Berlin. There is nothing funereal about this idyllic spot. It is a nice place to take a break from shopping, and their camellias are pretty spectacular in the spring. Another spot to put on your Delmarva Gardens list is Salisbury University and its Arboretum. They have a collection of over 2,000 tree species. The campus boasts 11 different garden sites, many which include sculptures. Further down the peninsula is Kerr Place in Onancock, Virginia. Their urban kitchen garden was designed as a Jeffersonian-style garden using historically accurate plants from the late 18th century. If you like butterflies, you should visit the garden at Blackwater Refuge near Cambridge, Maryland, or mark your calendar to visit the one at the Cape Charles, Virginia Wildlife Refuge. When conditions are right in the second week of September, it's a well-known stop on the flyway for monarch butterflies headed for Mexico. If you love gardening, visiting one of Delmarva's many public gardens will remind you what the difference is between beautiful but impersonal landscaping and a more personal creative garden. Visit our website, delmarvaalmanac.com/gardening, for links to all the places mentioned in this story. Be sure to check them for the times and days they are open. Some have entrance fees or request donations, but many are completely free. There are a number of other libraries, garden centers, and educational institutions with gardens that are also worth your time. If we missed your favorite public garden on Delmarva, let us know. Post a recommendation on our Facebook page or email us at gardener@delmarvaalmanac.com so we can continue to build our list. You're listening to the Delmarva Almanac. Now here's naturalist Jim Rapp to tell us about Prime Hook Wildlife Refuge.
Spring wildlife watching on Delmarva really starts to heat up in early May. By now, most of our summer breeding birds have arrived and are nesting or raising young. Migration is in full swing, so shorebirds and songbirds that nest north of us are passing through to fuel up. To experience spring on Delmarva at its finest, you must make a trip to Prime Hook National Wildlife Refuge, part of the Coastal Delaware National Wildlife Refuge complex that includes Bombay Hook near Dover. Prime Hook encompasses more than 10,000 acres of salt and freshwater marsh, shallow impoundments and ponds, forested swamps, and grassy fields. The refuge is a critical stopover along the Atlantic Flyway, and hundreds of thousands of migratory birds pass through each year. This diversity of habitat is also important for birds that breed and raise young on Delmarva. The name Prime Hook is a reminder that it was the Dutch who settled this region in the 17th century. Translated from the Dutch words for plum point, Prime Hook was named for the land's abundance of purple beech plums. These shrubs still thrive in the dunes along the Delaware Bay shore, where many plants can't survive in the sandy soil and salt spray from the bay. Before heading out to the Prime Hook beaches, check out the Refuge Visitor Center at the end of Turkle Pond Road. I am pronouncing that name correctly. Turkle, with a K, is just another way that some folks on Delmarva say the word turtle. Turkle Pond is just one of many on the refuge that provides habitat for fish, frogs, and yes, turkles. If you drive slowly, one of the turkles you might spot crossing the road is the eastern box turtle. Box turtles are terrestrial, unlike our aquatic turtles that you will find basking on a log in Prime Hook's ponds. They have a brightly colored, high-domed shell, known as a carapace, and a hinged plastron on their underside. When frightened, the turtle can close the plastron by pulling the hinged sections up against the carapace, protecting the turtle's soft, fleshy parts in a bony box. This defense mechanism works pretty well against most animal threats, but is no match against a motor vehicle. Please drive carefully to protect our box turtles. Another refuge resident has its own special signs asking you to drive with care. When you cross over the refuge boundary, you'll notice posted warnings along the roadside that may make you do a double take. The signs state, "Slow, endangered squirrel crossing." Yes, Delmarva, we have our own endangered squirrels, at least for a while. The Delmarva fox squirrel is currently protected as a federally endangered species, but it has recently been proposed for removal from the endangered species list after nearly 50 years of conservation efforts by public and private land managers. Delmarva fox squirrels are much larger than their more common cousin, the gray squirrel. Their fur coloration can be steel gray to silver white, and they have a big, beautiful, fluffy tail. They prefer quiet, older loblolly pine and hardwood forests with an open understory, and they spend much of their time foraging on the ground. By this time of year, females have probably given birth to a litter of 1 to 6 babies, which they'll care for until the little ones are weaned. Historically, the Delmarva fox squirrel ranged throughout the peninsula before populations declined in the mid-1900s due to unregulated hunting and the conversion of forest to farmland and housing developments. We're appreciative of Delmarva's National Wildlife Refuges, conservation biologists, and private landowners who work together to save the only animal I know with Delmarva in its name. This is Jim Rapp, and you are listening to the Delmarva Almanac. We're talking about Prime Hook National Wildlife Refuge. At the visitor center, you can choose several different trails to explore. Both the boardwalk trail and the dike trail are wheelchair accessible, and 1/2 mile long. From the boardwalk trail, you can view herons and egrets in the freshwater marsh. From the dike trail, you can hike out to a viewing deck that has expansive views of the marsh that leads to the Delaware Bay. After exploring the trails near the visitor center, drive back along Turkle Pond Road to Broadkill Road and hang a left towards the beach. Broadkill, another name that harkens back to Dutch settlement, the suffix kill is Dutch for creek, runs just north of the river that bears the same name. The Broadkill River flows east-northeast from Milton before it bends and runs south for 2 miles, close and parallel to the bay shore, and then dumping into the Delaware Bay northwest of Lewis, Delaware. Along Broadkill Road, you'll find a few spots on the shoulder where you can pull over to park safely and scan the marsh for wildlife. Binoculars and spotting scopes are very helpful here. Peering through your optics, you'll find many species of herons, egrets, shorebirds, and waterfowl on the shallow open water and mudflats. One of the truly amazing spectacles you might witness from the side of Broadkill Road is that of black skimmers feeding on small fish and minnows on the open water. Black skimmers are large water birds with a black back and cap and white bellies, long pointed wings, and one of the most unusual bills in the bird world. The black skimmer's large red and black bill is as thin as a steak knife, and the lower mandible is longer than the upper. When skimming for fish, the bird glides in a straight line with its lower mandible slicing the water. When it touches a fish, the upper bill snaps down in the blink of an eye, thus securing the skimmer's dinner. Black skimmers are mostly active at dawn and dusk. Because they rely on touch when feeding, you may also find them skimming at night. At the end of the road, you'll come to the community of Broadkill Beach. You can park in the designated areas and scan the beach for shorebirds. Early May is a good time to catch the beginning of the shorebird feeding frenzy that follows the spawning of horseshoe crabs along the Delaware Bay beaches. Until next time, I hope this story inspires you to explore Delmarva's many natural wonders.
Thanks, Jim. Here are two eco-friendly events for nature lovers being held next Saturday, May 21st. From 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Atkins Arboretum in Ridgely, they're holding the 4th annual Celebrating Natives Garden Tour, which will showcase gardens in Kent County and the importance of creating a more biodiverse landscape. And from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Assateague Island National Seashore, the Maryland Coastal Bays Program and the annual Great Worcester Herp Search will join forces with the National Park Service for the BioBlitz Fun Day. Join teams to help find and identify as many species as possible. Get links and details for these and other eco-friendly events on our website, delmarvaalmanac.com/events. Well, that's all for this edition of the Delmarva Almanac. Be sure to follow us on Facebook or Twitter, and next week join us to learn more about our local culture and get connected to our natural wonders. If you'd like to become an underwriter for this program, visit delmarvaalmanac.com/support. We'd like to thank our community partners, the Friends of Delmarva Public Radio, the Community Foundation of the Eastern Shore, and underwriters EatDrinkByArt.com for their help in bringing this program to you, our audience. Our theme music was provided by Brightside Studio. This show has been a Moonshell production. Thanks for listening. Until we meet again, may the rhythms and tides of Delmarva bring you good fortune.